everything was about engagement and job satisfaction. And what we felt was missing was that deeper level of meaningful connection and relationships in the workplace.
This is Leaderful, where we give you the models and the frameworks, the strategies and the skills that you need to drive true transformation for yourself, your team, your organization, and the world. Welcome to the show. All right, Pablo, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Today, I thought we would dig into workplace culture and experience. You know, it's the domain of a lot of the work that we do with organizations is really around that. How do employees actually experience the work that they do? And what does culture actually mean and look like in this organization? I know that this is a passion of yours. This is a lot of the work that you've done professionally over the years. And so my thinking today is that we can walk through some of the models and tools and frameworks that we've put together to help people understand the connection between some of these different experiences. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
Awesome. Well, let's jump into it. I'm actually going to pull up a slide. And for those who are listening to this via audio, don't worry. We'll talk you through it. So you don't need the visual. But for those that, you know, are watching this on video, it might be helpful to see some of this. And so let me pull it up. This is the circle diagram here shows the two core drivers that we believe have the highest impact on workplace culture and experience. And on the outer rim here, we see these six different indicators of workplace culture and experience. And so we'll probably talk through each of them, but maybe I'll pass it over to you to talk a little bit about these core drivers. Why did these surface for us in our work with teams as the key ingredients or those key drivers of workplace culture?
Yeah, obviously you and I connected when you started to share some of your thought leadership and knowledge around the right use of power. You know, as someone who led people and culture in a couple organizations and then who consulted in it, I always felt there was something missing. You know, we talk a lot about the intention versus impact gap. And so as a leader, it was one of those things where when I remember, you know, I would have the best intentions, we would launch this exciting initiative and then it would fall flat or even like sometimes backfire. And I didn't know, and I couldn't put my finger on the pulse of like, what's going wrong here? We were having conversations. I felt like I was creating a safe space for people to come and approach me. You know, we hear it so much. I've got an open door pulse. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we're like, oh, great. How many people are coming through the door? It's like, well, you know, one or two, right? Or nobody. For me, it was this thing like, what don't I know right now? Like, you don't know what you don't know, right? And so there was this awareness. And I think the right use of power is such a powerful tool, but also a framework for people as individuals to reflect on self, to reflect on the dynamics that exist, you know, with the five types of power. And so, Jeff, actually, this might be a good kind of transfer over to you to explain those five types, because those really resonated for me in terms of an internal awareness, you know, thermostat.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe I'll back into that conversation a little bit with what the kind of the typical view on some of these things is, or the mainstream view, because I actually think that this conversation about power is the missing ingredient in so many of the conversations that we're having about workplace culture, about leadership, about the dynamics that exist in the world. And so let's take, you know, one of these, something like psychological safety. You know, there's a lot of conversation about psychological safety. There's a strong body of research that suggests it's the number one ingredient, or it's the most important thing for innovative and high functioning teams, is a sense of safety psychologically. We can break that down a little bit in a little later. But what's not being talked about is whose responsibility is it to create safe spaces? There's a lot of, you know, belief out there that this is this shared thing. Everybody has to come to the table. And to a certain degree, sure. You know, everybody who is sitting at a table or who is on a team has a contribution to make to the level of safety on that team. But there's a disproportionate amount of that belongs with leadership, right? Because leaders have more power than the other people do in the room. And so as soon as you understand or acknowledge that there's a power dynamic that exists in organizations for lots of different reasons, that different types of power play out in that. But if you have a leader with more power to influence or impact the people that they're responsible for, they also have more responsibility for something like psychological safety. And I don't see that conversation really happening. You know, there's a lot of like, here's how to create safe spaces, but it doesn't explicitly say people with power need to understand it and use it well, right? Have some skill and some wisdom with its use. And so with that, the right use of power framework for me was really helpful because it gave language and it gave that, like you said, that awareness of the power dynamic and an ability to see it happening in ways that I wasn't able to before. So it's one of those, you know, if you've ever had that experience where it's like you put on a new set of goggles and you see the world in a different color, it's kind of that phenomenon for leaders often. It's like, oh, now I can see power dynamics. You can't unsee them. So what do we do with that? Right? Well, we can be more intentional about creating psychologically safe spaces, about fostering healthy conflict, about using communication as a tool, right, for having an impact, because that's probably the primary way in which we have impact with power. And so power is connected to these other indicators. And you know, we have some videos out there about the five types of power. I'll do really quickly here. There's five different types. So there's personal power. There's the power that you and I both use to get ourselves out of bed and get ourselves to this podcast recording and, you know, feed ourselves along the way or have a shower, you had a workout. So, you know, we use power to take action in the world and affect change for ourselves. And then we have role power, and we have that in the room as well. You know, you and I both have roles at the Ally Co. We have roles as fathers. We have roles in different areas of our life. Some are formal, some are less formal. But with those roles come responsibility and come the ability to affect change and have an impact. We talk about status power. And again, that's here with us today. You can't escape it. You know, we two men, two white passing men, right? English speaking, middle-aged, you know, lots of power is associated with that, those statuses of membership in those groups. And so that has an impact. We talk about collective power. And that's when people get together and say, hey, we collectively, we have shared needs and values. And so let's work together to make that change happen in the world. And we see a lot of that happening in the world as well, from union pushes at Starbucks and Amazon right now, as we're recording this, to Black Lives Matter. The past couple of years has been a strong force for changing policy at the structural level. And that's the fifth type of power, is the structural power. And those are the mindsets and the beliefs and the stories and the systems that guide, build the container in which other things are possible. And so we can dig into that probably at another podcast. But those five types of power, when we acknowledge them, when we can see them, it impacts leadership and how we show up and the impact that we have. And so that places right use of power and leadership impact for us as core drivers of workplace experience. And then there's the research out there that suggests, you know, 70% of the workplace experience is directly attributable to our managers, right? The people we report directly to. And there's a lot of research around like why people leave their jobs. And it's more often than not the manager, the person with power, and how they show up with that power, than it is the work itself, right? So that's a quick overview. Why don't we jump into the indicators? Let's do a walkthrough around the circle here.
Do you mind if I just say two more things, based on this, on the core drivers? So one thing, when we're talking about leadership impact, a lot of the time when we're going in to assess or capture the current state of leadership impact, and just for anybody who's new to us, we have a definition for leadership as, leader as anyone who takes responsibility for themselves and their world. And so when we think that way, and we think about our mission or the purpose of our work with organizations, is to create leaderful organizations where leadership, distributed decision-making, ownership, responsibility are spread out through the organization, right? And so I remember thinking when we were designing this model that the right use of power actually helps to create, I would say, I find that executives and leaders have an easier time connecting with the language and talking about power, you know, especially when we're starting to dig into areas like diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice. It's a language that I've seen help transition people into those conversations at a deeper level. And so one thing also, Jeff, when you and I were looking at, you know, a lot of the ways that organizations assess, you know, how they may be doing here, their baselines, a lot of the time they weren't going deep enough to get feedback from the people that they're actually trying to impact. And the other piece that was missing was everything was about engagement and job satisfaction. And what we felt was missing was that deeper level of meaningful connection and relationships in the workplace. And I don't think it's going to come to as a surprise to anybody, but we're seeing this huge shift in movement in terms of employee needs for purpose, connection, relationship. And by understanding power dynamics at work, that's what we think, like Jeff, you said earlier, are really going to drive the indicators. And so just as we jump into indicators, Jeff, one way I like to visualize indicators is the signals that are coming out from the organization, whether it's smoke, a beacon, you know, that you want to visualize. And so what it does is, it's a, you know, as a leader, you say, okay, well, that's interesting. I wonder what it means. And it allows you to go deeper into those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love that and the language we use around indicators, because it really is that. It's neither good nor bad. It's just a signal of what's so, of the lived experience. And a lot of the work that we do is to help leaders understand that lived experience of their people and get that feedback, because depending on the power dynamics, again, feedback mechanisms are often broken inside of organizations. They're either non-existent or they're there, but they're that open door policy that nobody walks through to give the tough, pinchy feedback about how that leader showed up in that meeting that they just had. Right. And so, for us, these indicators are, you know, team function, team health, kind of overall well-being of a team is wrapped up in a lot of these indicators. And so, why don't we actually jump to that one? Let's start with team well-being. Why is that important as an indicator? And what do we mean by team well-being?
Yeah, I mean, I could just personal story. my, you know, earlier on in my career, you know, just got caught up in a system or a culture of, you know, sink or swim. Where, you know, everything is sacrificed for the sake of the organization, but really everything was sacrificed for the leader and profitability, at the expense of health. And I got super sick, and it was as simple as me being very tired, not being able to function at my best. So not being a great leader, not being a great mentor, not a great father. So obviously the quality of my work at some point was probably not great. All the way to me having to have my large intestine removed, because I, you know, had an autoimmune disorder that I didn't take notice of or set any limits and boundaries around my health. So, you know, that impacted so many other people with this ripple effect out. And as a leader in the organization, I'm sure that was felt. So for me, for us, I know that, you know, this is a very important, area for us to focus on. And I mean, again, just look around. How many articles, how many people are talking about burnout, frustration, stress? There's a huge, you know, great reset or resignation, like all the signals out there around how important this indicator is and how it's being impacted these days.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's, you know, the traditional view of this might look like, let's bring in someone for a lunch and learn on topic X, or let's do Friday, you know, have beers on Friday at 3 or something like that. And those are important things, and you know, they contribute in meaningful ways, but what we're talking about is digging again deeper into the lived experience and looking at physical well-being and psychological well-being and relational well-being and even spiritual well-being, our connection to meaning and purpose as individuals. So, you know, fairly deep exploration of team well-being, because at the end of the day, you know, when we're not well, I know when I'm not doing well, like you said, other people aren't doing well in my life, whether they're my employees or my colleagues or my kids, right? It has that impact. So team well-being, of course, is a great indicator, I think, of the overall kind of health of a team, health of a workplace. Where should we go next? What's an important one to move to from here?
Yeah, I think the well-being, you know, we can, like you said, we can branch off into, I think meaningful connection or psychological safety for me are really, you know, connected with someone's well-being. Mm-hmm. What about psychological safety? It's a hot one right now.
Sure.
Right?
Let's talk about psychological
safety. It's been for
years. It has been, you know, the research on that, I think, goes back to Amy Edmondson in the early 2000s. Yeah. So probably 20 years ago, she published a paper about the importance of psychological safety. And it probably takes about 20 years for a research paper in academia to make its way into mainstream discussion and thought leadership. There's a lot of thought leadership out there around psychological safety. Some of it resonates with me because I can see the connection to right use of power. Some of it's a little bit surface level again. We can dig into it, but let's maybe do that. Let's maybe talk about Dr. Timothy Clark's model around the four stages of psychological safety, because I found that one to be quite a helpful model, and we've used it with clients as well. And so the first type, maybe I'll talk about the first two types and then you can take the second two. So the first type of safety, kind of the most basic type of psychological safety, is inclusion safety. And that's that safety that exists, you know, you're accepted and loved and supported as just a person, right? Doesn't matter who you are and how you show up in your identities, that you're welcome at the table, right? You don't have to be somebody else in that environment. You don't have to put on a mask or hide pieces of yourself in order to be accepted. And so inclusion safety is really about just, you know, unconditional positive regard, which for your humanity, right? And that's a pretty important piece. You can't get to the other stages of psychological safety if we don't have that. The next type of safety is this idea of learning safety or learner safety. And that's the safety that exists when you're able to make mistakes or you're able to put your hand up and say, hey, I don't actually know how to do that. Can somebody help me? Or can I, I've got some learning to do. I made a mistake and we can debrief that, right? That's a different type of vulnerability because that's, you know, there's a lot of pressure, I think, on a lot of professionals to know what they're doing, right? You know, you've been hired to do a job. And so that act of saying, actually don't know how to do that piece of the job, or that's new to me. That there's a safe level of safety that's required there as well. What are the next two after learning safety?
Yeah. I just on the inclusion safety one, I heard an analogy the other day where, you know, diversity, if you have diversity and you don't have inclusion, it's like having a cup with holes in it. And so the inclusion, so a lot of organizations do a lot of job to hire and recruit a lot of different types of human beings, but then they don't have the behaviors, the culture, the systems and the tools in place to actually include that diverse group in the business in different ways. And so I just thought that analogy was helpful for me. Mm-hmm. Contributor safety is the third type of safety. And, you know, for that, you know, I think about, you know, some of the questions that we ask people when we're doing our culture surveys. It's, you know, my leader encourages me to share perspectives and new ideas. I feel like my role and the work I do has a direct impact on our purpose. You know, this is where someone is feeling safe to speak up in a meeting and share an idea. You know, it ties, as you can see, very closely to learner safety, to speak up and share an idea, to go and contribute and try something that might fail, but as a whole, the organization learns a lesson as well. So I don't know if you want to add anything there to contributor safety.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. That analogy or that visual of somebody at a table and there's a need or there's a problem that's been identified. And instead of just sitting there quietly or phoning it in or just kind of like quietly just going along with the mainstream, they put their hand up and say, hey, what about this? All right. Have we tried this? Have we thought about that? Yeah. Or I've did this over here and it worked really well. Might it work here? It's that willingness and ability to contribute meaningfully. And there is risk in that. Right? Because like you say, it might not work, right? Or it might be shot down, or you might, the dynamics on the team, the power dynamics get laid bare pretty quickly in that environment, right? How safe do we actually feel to contribute? So the last one is challenger safety. And actually you're an example of someone, when I think about somebody who steps into challenger safety, I think you do it really well. So I think I'd love to hear your take on it.
Yeah. I mean, I can also be, we have a word for me, jolty. and so, you know, in challenger safety, if you're someone, for example, at an up power position, you want to probably be practicing compassionate curiosity to challenge ideas. Challenger safety. I mean, I think it speaks for itself, is just, you know, feeling safe to challenge, whether it's an idea, an existing process, maybe a belief or a communication that's come out of the organization. I would say when we look at scores, we can actually see a progression of like a lower score as they go from learner to challenger. But it's not only the encouragement to speak up and challenge something if people feel it's wrong or not helpful, but it's also the person actually, you know, we see this a lot in our surveys. Yes, we're encouraged to do this thing. No, we don't feel safe to do it. Mm-hmm. And so again, we there's the intention versus impact gap. And so really digging into understanding, you know, for example, if you are, if you have a meeting and where you want to, this is how, what ties into healthy conflict and productive tension. But as a leader, for example, you can create a space that everybody has a voice. You can create games. You know, you can recognize culturally and reward people for challenging ideas. I know there's a company, it might be Google, so it might not be, but they have a graveyard for all the terrible ideas that they had that only became terrible ideas when someone challenged them, mm-hmm. right? And allowed them to pivot. So, sorry, I went off on a tangent there because it's one of my favorite ones, as you mentioned earlier.
No, and it's such a, when I think of, you know, any like, the most concrete indicator for me of power dynamics of how well they're being used is challenger safety, right? Because it is up to the leader to make that safe, right? How a leader responds to critical or negative or constructive feedback sets the tone for psychological safety at large, right? And so leaders who not only, you know, acknowledge it and welcome it, but also like encourage it and don't punish it. Like that's probably the differentiator there, is like, are people punished for speaking up or speaking truth to power? or are they rewarded and encouraged to do that? There's the incentives there. Is there an incentive to challenge, or is there a disincentive? And that's fully in control of the leaders, right, and how they respond to that. So this one, I think psychological safety is a pretty, you know, we end up doing a lot of those assessments because it's such a key indicator and it's connected so tightly back to right use of power. Because the goal, obviously, with power is to create the conditions for engagement, the conditions for connection, and a core piece of that is safety, psychological safety. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Leaderful, where we give you the skills, the strategies, the frameworks, and the tools that you need to drive transformational change in your world. This podcast is brought to you by The Ally Co., where we co-design and build workplaces where people consciously use their power to build meaningful connection, practice conscious communication, and create purposeful impact. Head over to www.theallyco.world and check out the events page for upcoming events like our Learning in Action sessions, as well as any workshops and courses that you might be interested in taking. Thanks so much, and talk to you soon.